Welcome to A Slab of Glass. I'm Christopher Lawley. Each week I'm joined by my co-host Jeff Perry as we discuss iOS and iPad productivity. Hey Jeff, how's it going?
Going really well, Chris. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. I'm really excited to be back. We are talking about storage and cloud services today.
Yeah, and I'm excited to sort of hear what you have to say when it comes to cloud storage, because I think that you, since you work with video and there's a lot of data and files and stuff that go with it, I think that you probably have a better hand in organization and stuff like that. And I'm excited to sort of take some notes from you and how you manage to do all of that, as well as our listeners can hopefully take notes from the both of us.
Yeah, absolutely. When dealing with a lot of large video files and things like that, you have to be organized or it's really easy to lose the data that you've been working with.
Yeah, exactly. So before we really dive into the storages that we use and the setups that we have, I think there's a really good point that we need to make when it comes to local storage versus cloud storage. And so the definition that I have, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, but local storage is essentially the files that you have saved on your device. And since this is all about iPad, the storage that you have on your iPad and the files that you save on the actual hard drive within the iPad is considered local storage. And cloud storage, whether you use Dropbox, Google Drive, OneDrive, there's a myriad of options that you can really have, is that the files that you have in those services that aren't downloaded or saved onto your device is considered cloud storage. But there's that gray area, you know, where you have files that are in the cloud, but you save them to the device, where it's kind of both local storage and cloud storage, where if you make changes to those files locally, they will then sync up in the cloud storage. So it's kind of confusing, but I think that most of our listeners will understand it. Am I missing anything here? Is that right for you?
Couldn't have said it better myself. Local storage is basically the stuff that's on device. Cloud storage is the stuff that you use a service that kind of syncs up to the cloud. That could be Google Drive, Dropbox, OneDrive, so on, so on. There's also some gray areas with if you have a server, things like that. And we'll cover that in a little later in the episode.
So I think that we need to kind of start things off with the local storage side of things, and then we'll go into the cloud storage. So what kind of, I'm probably assuming that you have a giant iPad storage device, like whether it's the 256 or the 512 gig. I mean, I can only imagine how much stuff you have to save on your iPad when you are recording and editing videos. So how big is the iPad that you use, considering the storage?
So when I got the first iPad Pro, the first gen 12.9-inch iPad Pro, I went with the middle tier. I went with 128.
Okay.
And this was with in mind that, hey, I might do video editing on it one day. I didn't expect to do it as soon as I was doing it. And I quickly ran out of space on that device. And when the second generation ones came out, and I kind of passed them up for a little while, I didn't upgrade until very, very recently. I went with the 512 gig model this time.
Oof.
And the reason why I went so big is because I want to be able to have as much local storage and much all of my footage, all of my audio clips, all my assets. I wanted to be able to have as much of that on device as possible. And that was really important to me because I needed to be able to have peace of mind that I could go work anywhere and I'd have my clips with me and I wouldn't have to download them from the internet using LTE or something like that and just absolutely destroy my data plan.
Right. Yeah. And that makes sense. So, I mean, if you were to go in, I don't know if you can do this right now on camera or if you can kind of give a rough estimation, but like looking at your iPad right now, what's the storage settings look like? Like how much free space do you have? How much space are you using? Because I'm really curious as to know that you have half a terabyte in hard drive space. I want to see how far you're kind of pushing it when it comes to storage.
I actually just earlier this week went in and kind of cleaned everything up when I was actually doing the show notes for this video. It was kind of it gave me a prompt to go in and kind of clean stuff up. And
right.
Earlier this week I was using about 300 gigs.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right now I'm down to 100 gigs that I'm using. So I went in and I cleaned up a bunch of old projects. I offloaded some footage and stuff that I just wasn't using anymore from done projects or projects that I'm just kind of abandoned.
Yeah.
I still have a little bit ways to clean up, but for the most part, I'm at about 100 gigs used right now, but I was about 300 gigs used earlier this week. And wow. By the time this weekend's over, I'll probably be back up to 300 gigs.
No kidding. That's huge to me. Like I personally can't understand how someone could have that much storage. I mean, it makes perfect sense when you're editing and recording 4K video and stuff like that, like, I totally get it. But for me, like, I had the 128 gig iPad Air 2 before I, that was when I first started going all in on the iPad and started working a lot on the iPad and stuff like that. The 128 gig was such overkill, in my opinion, because I had I had everything on there. I never worried about storage or anything like that. I mean, this is back in iOS 9, where like the Files app and stuff like that isn't necessarily easily available. So you kind of had to rely on third-party apps that supported Dropbox syncing and things like that. So a lot of the stuff I used was saved on my iPad, and I just sort of kept it there because that was the main device I was using at the time. And even then, when I had everything on there, everything I could imagine, whether it's movies that I want to watch or audio that I need to edit or all of my text files and stuff like that. Granted, text files are super small, even if they're like novel sized. But like everything that was on that 128 gig, I barely hit 50 gigs. And it was that was me like putting as much as I could on there and never having much of an issue with storage or anything like that. So when I decided to go and get the 10.5, I looked long and hard at both my iPhone storage usage and my iPad storage usage. And the iPhone had 64 gigs, had all of my podcasts, all of my music, everything else that I was listening to as far as media goes. And my iPad had a bunch of movies on it, a bunch of files and stuff that I was using to write with, to work with. And I neither of them hit above 50 gigabytes in storage. And I just decided to get the 64 gig when I got the 10.5. And I haven't had too many issues with it personally. Like I looked at my storage also in the middle of these show notes and stuff like that, where I only have, I think, like 12 gigs of stuff on it right now. And that's with a couple of Netflix movies and some VLC files and stuff like that that I'm using to watch videos on. I never have a storage issue when it comes to that kind of stuff. So it's really fun to hear that you use the max file size or storage size, and I have, you know, the lower end. I think 64 might be the lowest, if not 32 gig is. So it's on the lower side of the storage. So different strokes for different folks, obviously.
Absolutely. I think, like you said, it's definitely depends on what you're doing. Since I'm editing 4K video, I need as much possible space as possible. I went with the biggest tier, and I don't think I will ever look back now. I think it'll always be the biggest tier of storage that I could possibly get. Now, for most people and most of our listeners, they probably could get away with the minimum storage and save quite a bit of money. The 64 gig models are quite a bit cheaper than the higher end tier ones of storage wise. So if you really just want to write or do something that just doesn't take up a lot of space, I would definitely look into the lower storage tiers if you're looking to buy an iPad.
Yeah. But, you know, with that said, you can actually, even if you are like a pro user, you could probably find ways to get around the local storage size and start using cloud services, because cloud services are just so cheap.
Absolutely.
Now. I mean, I don't know if you pay for cloud services or not, but I know that I have the Dropbox service of 1 terabyte of storage for $9.99 a month. I use that for practically everything that I use. I sync all of my files with Dropbox when I write. I sync all of my audio files that I edit, both freelance and for the podcast that I am on. And I save everything to the Dropbox files that I have. And I barely use 25% of it. So, you know, even then I only have like 250 gigs worth of stuff in my storage and everything like that. So I am kind of nervous to ask you how much you have in cloud services, because, you know, when you have local files of 300 gigs on just your iPad, and how much of that goes to the cloud, and how much cloud space do you need to make all that work?
So as far as cloud space goes, I've tried pretty much every cloud service you can think of. I think I have 100 and something gigs in box.net. I have like 200 gigs in Google Drive space. I have 100 gigs, I believe, in OneDrive space. But the two big cloud storage options that I use are Dropbox and iCloud. And it's kind of funny. Dropbox is actually the cloud service that I have the least amount of storage in. I actually don't pay for the storage in Dropbox. I use the free tier, which the free tier is normally just 2 gigs. But when Dropbox was starting up years and years ago, I got on board pretty early, and they offered they offered a few different ways to get extra free storage for life. You could refer people and you'd get free storage. You could also find bugs in the platform, and whether it was, you know, web service or local application or whatever, if you found bugs, they would give you free storage. So I actually ended up getting, like, I think I'm at like 15 gigs or something of free Dropbox storage. And I really use Dropbox mainly for documents and sharing, so collaboration. So we put our audio files for this podcast in Dropbox, and that's how I get them when I go to edit. I also do all my documents, personal, work-related, all that stuff goes into Dropbox, so I keep all that there. iCloud is where things kind of get a little interesting. For me, I pay for the biggest tier of iCloud space, which I believe is 2 terabytes for $10 a month. What gets interesting about iCloud for me is that's where I keep all my footage and all of my assets and everything that I'm working on for a video project or audio project like this podcast. That's where everything gets stored while I'm working on it. And the reason why I chose iCloud over all the other ones is really it's iOS 11. When they released the Files app, I wanted to really use that when the beta process was going and I didn't have access to the Dropbox beta or any of the other betas that were out there. So iCloud was the only one that integrated with the Files app during the beta period. Turns out iCloud is still the best that integrates with all the Files app. Dropbox is a little janky. Google Drive is next to impossible to use. iCloud is the best when it comes to working with the Files app. And that's why I still keep all of my project files and all of my assets, videos, and all that stuff in iCloud, just because it's the most reliable of all the services that works with the Files app. And I really, really like the Files app.
These are two questions I have that kind of have personal issues that I have when it comes to the Files app. One, do you ever notice the issue with Dropbox where if you try and download a file, it just never downloads? Have you ever had that problem? Because I have that constantly.
Yep, I have that problem every time I go to edit this podcast. I have to do kind of a little bit of a workaround. I basically have to move the files outside of Dropbox and put them in iCloud Drive in order for them to download. And I don't think it's an issue with files. I think it's an issue with Dropbox. But honestly,
yeah.
Apple should make files a better application that's easier for third parties to integrate with. They shouldn't have to, there shouldn't be a subpar version of files because I'm using Dropbox and not iCloud Drive.
I totally agree with that. And so my other question I have is that, do you know how to keep a file in iCloud but not have it saved in local storage? Is there any way that you can make that happen? I've never figured out how to do that, but I also haven't done much digging. So maybe you can give, if you know how to do it, if you can give me some tips on how to make that happen.
This one is kind of weird. So there's no way to force anything to stay local, or there's no way to force anything to always stay in the cloud. Basically, what happens is, when you put something in iCloud Drive, it uploads to the cloud, and then after a certain amount of time, if you don't use it, it wipes it from your local storage. So it's still accessible, it's still in iCloud Drive, but it's stored on the servers and not locally. When you go to need it, it downloads it, and then it stays downloaded as long as you're using that file, and then when you're done using it, it wipes itself again from local storage, and then you can come back to it, which can kind of be a pain when you're dealing with really large files like videos or audio. For me, it seems like whenever I import a video into LumaFusion or if I import something into Ferrite, it makes a copy of those and it stores them locally on device and with accessible to the app. So I don't have any problems when I'm like editing footage or anything like that. But I really wish there was a way to kind of pin something locally. I think that needs to be a feature in the future version of files.
Yeah, hopefully that'll come soon. But I'm not going to hold my breath too much for it because I think that's such an edge case that I don't know if it's going to be something that they implement in iOS 12. But, you know, maybe it'll happen soon, but, you know, fingers crossed.
Yep, absolutely.
So, I mean, we've kind of talked a little bit about what services we use and why we use those kind of services. So let's kind of go into the weeds a little bit. I think you, Chris, are very much more technically inclined when it comes to like where you save your stuff and why you have them saved. Like, I think at some point you use an FTP server or something like that. So can you kind of give us a quick walkthrough on, you know, a day in the life of your cloud storage, you know, like where you put certain things and why and, you know, when you use those kind of things?
Yeah, so this is going to get kind of weird, but I promise I have a reason for doing all of this.
Okay.
So first up, all of my stuff, when if I have footage, so we're going to talk about a video, for instance. We're going to talk about as I make it a video. So if I'm filming footage on my iPhone, what I'll do is when I'm done filming that footage, I AirDrop it to my iPad. And then I take that footage, and unfortunately with AirDrop, since it's a video, it automatically imports into photos. So what I do is I drag and drop all that stuff, and then I put it into iCloud. Then iCloud will sync all that stuff up. That's great. What'll happen then is as I start to import stuff into LumaFusion, it makes a copy of those files and it imports them locally into LumaFusion so they're there for me to edit. What you can do with LumaFusion, and this is LumaFusion for those that don't know, is the app that I use to edit videos, is you can back up your project. Now, this is where things get a little weird. I have a Mac Mini that's running macOS Server, which is about ready to be deprecated, which is very unfortunate. I'm going to have to figure out some solutions, but maybe we'll do a whole episode on that later on. Once I have my project and I do a backup, I take that and I have SFTP running on that Mac. Now, what SFTP is, Secure File Transfer Protocol. Now, if you have heard of FTP servers or anything like that, you're probably very familiar with this. You should not be using FTP anymore. I'm going to use this as my soapbox moment. FTP is not secure. It is incredibly easy to hack. So whatever you do, if you want to set something up like what I'm going to talk about, don't use FTP, use SFTP. Now, what makes my server a little different from most is it is not accessible outside of my network. You have to be physically on my network. So I can't access any of my data that's on my server outside of my network. And I did that by design. I don't want it accessible to the outside world. Security is very important. It's kind of part of my day job, so I take this stuff very seriously, and I do not want it accessible outside of my network. So if I'm working at a coffee shop or I'm traveling or something like that, everything stays local on device. It still gets backed up to iCloud, but it stays local until I get home. And I did that by design because I do not want it accessible to the outside world. So if you're thinking about trying to find out my next video, you can't unless you're on my network.
Right.
So once I do that, I back it up to my SFTP server. It sits on my Mac Mini, which has about 12 terabytes of storage right now.
Oh my God. How does that happen? Is that internal or is that an external drive you have on it?
That is an external. I have an external RAID plugged into my Mac Mini. So it actually has 13 terabytes, technically. It has a terabyte of internal storage, and then it has a 12 terabyte RAID setup. And it is set up in, if I remember correctly, it is set up in RAID 5. So what that means is all the data is backed up. So if I lose a hard drive, and I'm not going to get into the minutia of the different RAIDs, maybe I'll do a video on that on my YouTube channel one day. But basically, that means if I lose a hard drive in my RAID, I can take that hard drive out, replace it, and I didn't lose any data whatsoever.
Yeah, that's really nice.
Yeah, so it's pretty handy to have. So not all 12 terabytes is accessible because there's backups and stuff like that. I believe it's 8 terabytes is accessible. I could be wrong. I don't remember off the top of my head. For the most part, so once I'm done editing videos, then I back up that video to my server. I also use that server to upload videos because YouTube does not allow 4K uploads from iOS for whatever reason. I'm trying to figure out a workaround for that, but unfortunately, as of right now, it does not do that.
Yeah.
But basically, everything I've ever worked on, whether it's a video project, audio project, development project, anything like that, gets backed up to that server. And the way I move stuff to that server is an app called Transmit. Now, here comes another unfortunate. Transmit was recently pulled from the App Store, and we're going to do a whole episode on pro apps. It's in the show notes. It's something I'm very passionate about. But Transmit, the developers, Panic, who is a very big software company. They are absolutely huge. They've been around forever. In fact, Steve Jobs tried to once buy them out and have them make the next iTunes. But they said no. They actually turned down Steve Jobs. That's kind of a crazy thing.
Yeah.
But they found that they could not make Transmit work for iOS. It just wasn't making enough money for them to continue development, and they didn't want to put it in maintenance mode. They want a good software application. They take a lot of pride in their software, and that's something I admire about that company.
Yeah.
I buy every piece of their software that I possibly can, even if I'm not sure I'm going to use it, just because I want to support companies like that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of something I'm very passionate about.
Yeah.
So right now I use Transmit to move those files from my iPad to my Mac. I'm going to be looking into something else because obviously Transmit isn't around anymore and I want something that's going to be keep getting developed. But for right now, I'm still using Transmit. So I move that stuff there. When it's on my local storage, it gets backed up to the RAID, so there's the RAID, but I also have an offsite backup too as well. And then I have Backblaze taking an image of my server and backing it up to their cloud service. What's great about Backblaze is it's $5 a month and it's unlimited storage. They're not a sponsor or anything. They sponsor a lot of podcasts. They're not a sponsor, but I absolutely love Backblaze. It's been a fantastic application for me. I have all of my storage backed up to it. It's really, really handy to have. So I think that's kind of covers my local storage and the way I use it. Do you have any questions, Jeff?
So my question, I mean, how often is SFTP like updated? You know, like while Transmit isn't necessarily available in the App Store anymore, if you own the app before they took it out of the App Store, you still have it. And it's still useful. Mm-hmm. But like, how often are things like FTP and SFTP like changed? I mean, in my estimation, it's like SFTP will kind of always work even if the app isn't being updated. Like, how many issues do you come across with transmission currently?
So protocols like that never get changed. FTP, SFTP, SMB, there's versions of those, and those versions are never changed. So as long as Transmit runs on iOS, SFTP will work, FTP will work. But you can get into things like SMB, and SMB is I forget what it stands for, but basically it's an old Windows thing, but there's SMB version 1, which do not use SMB version 1. It is incredibly vulnerable. Please do not use SMB version 1 if you're looking into doing something like this. There's SMB version 2, and there's SMB version 3, which is pretty recent. Those things right there are file transfer protocols that allow you to share files across your network, things like that. But as the versions change, security changes with them, so certain devices won't be able to support them. If you have things like scanners and things like that, you have to either do firmware updates to them or replace them completely. It's things like that change, but stuff like SFTP won't change unless there's like another version of FTP, and that'll be called something else. It'll be like ESFTP or something like that.
Right, yeah. So it sounds like, you know, the only thing that can kind of break transmission currently is if and when iOS makes changes as to what applications are available on certain devices. You know, we just had the 64-bit only change from 32-bit back in, I think it was iOS 10 or iOS 11.
iOS 11.
Yeah, so when iOS 11 became 64-bit only, that you try and download older applications that were built on 32-bit, it would basically say, hey, that's not something that we can do anymore. It's not supported. Tell your app developer to update, blah, blah, blah. So a lot of apps either died because of that, or you had to go and find, and or you had to go and find replacements for them. You know, and that was primarily for applications like Transmit that are either no longer being developed or have been removed from the App Store entirely. So you can't even update them even if you wanted to. So it sounds like it's going to be a problem with iOS, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Transmit will work until iOS breaks it. It could be as soon as iOS 12. It may be iOS 20. Nobody knows.
Right.
So what about you, Jeff? What do you do for storage? How do you make your stuff work?
So my storage is fairly simple relative to yours, Chris. I basically just use Dropbox for everything currently. You are piquing my interest to sort of switch over to iCloud and see if I can try that out, because you know, I've also heard of other people that have made the switch over to iCloud and haven't had too many issues with it. I've heard that there are some kind of quirks that iCloud could offer, like there are instances where files could be, you know, synced improperly, or there could be issues with the syncing, or sometimes iCloud will just sort of get rid of everything. But that's such an edge case and such an outlier. I haven't seen too many people have that problem. And even then, they can try and figure out a way to restore it.
So there's one thing I want to point out before I point people down the iCloud route. The great thing about Dropbox is they have what's called versioning. So if you accidentally delete a file from Dropbox, you have, and I think it's 48 hours, but that timing could be wrong, so don't quote me on that. You have an amount of time to go back in there and recover it. And I believe iCloud Drive has something very similar to that, but it's not as easy to work with. So that's something to keep in mind with Dropbox, is there is a pseudo sort of backup, but please don't rely on that as being a backup in there just in case if you need it. The big thing for me that I picked iCloud Drive for is just because A, the Files app works better, but B, I also wanted to be able to make sure my devices are all packed up. So my iPad, iPhone, and my photos. And with that, I needed the bigger tier. So I figured it, since I'm already paying for the 2 terabytes of storage, I would use that for my footage and all that other stuff. So keep that in mind when you're picking storage as well. So it, 'cause iCloud's great, but it doesn't offer all the features that Dropbox does.
And, you know, when it comes to my storage and stuff like that, I am primarily just saving text files. You know, most of the stuff I work with is writing. I don't edit audio too much, except for the podcast that I work on. And even then, I still use my Mac for that. It's the only thing that I regularly use my Mac for is editing podcasts, primarily just because I'm kind of set in my ways and the applications that I use and stuff like that. Fairwrite's a great app, and if you are interested in editing audio, I highly recommend trying out Fairwrite. For me, I'm kind of a dinosaur when it comes to editing podcasts. I've been doing it for years and years, and I've always edited with a Mac, and I've always used an application called Hindenburg, and I love it. It's the best way for me to edit my podcast, and that's what I use my Mac for, the only time I ever crack it open. So when the audio aspects and those larger files are out of the question, it's primarily just text documents and any media that I consume that are saved onto my devices. So I just have everything synced with Dropbox when it comes to my writing. I use applications like Editorial, Byword, Ulysses. Ulysses is the only one that I use that's actually synced with iCloud, but I use the other two for syncing with Dropbox. So I have all of my stuff, for all intents and purposes, synced with Dropbox. And the organization that I kind of have with it is kind of gross is probably the best word to explain it, is that I have folders for every kind of hat that I wear, but that's about it. I should probably get more granular with it just because I feel like I'm not seeing all the files and stuff that I want to see, and it's something that I need to work on. But, you know, as far as like where I save all of my stuff and everything, Dropbox is where I go to save all of my files that I want to get to regularly, and then iCloud is sort of my backup when it comes to applications that only sync with iCloud or prefer to use iCloud over Dropbox. So I don't use any like SFTP servers or anything like that. I find no real need to do so. And, you know, that's how I save all of my stuff.
Yeah, that makes sense. You mentioned, you know, saving and organizing and stuff like that. I was curious, have you ever tried tagging?
No, but I know that you do. Kind of walk me through how you use tags, because tags have been a part of the macOS system for years now. And I never really got into it. I never really thought about using it. And when they moved over to iOS 11, they offered tags for sync support with iCloud with that stuff as well. And even then, I still had never used it, never really found any interest in it. So kind of explain to me what tags are and why they're so useful for you, Chris.
Okay, so I'm going to back up just a little bit. So first off, we mentioned tags are available on iOS 11. Now, tagging, it seems like, and I haven't been able to get it to work with any of the third-party cloud storage solutions. I've only been able to get it to work with iCloud. So this is something to keep in mind, that if you want to use tagging, you probably will have to use iCloud storage. I'm not sure if that's an Apple thing or if it's that the third parties don't want to integrate with that. I'm not entirely sure on that. I've tried to do some research and I've kind of seen fingers being pointed both ways, so I'm not entirely sure what to believe. But as of right now, when we're recording this, iCloud is the only one that supports tagging. So if this is something you're interested in, you'll have to deal with iCloud storage.
Okay.
Tagging has been around sort of on the Mac for a very long time, but it was through third-party apps and kind of hacking your way. The tagging didn't show up natively until OS X Mavericks.
Okay.
So that was something that was kind of really exciting when that showed up. But when it did, I kind of played around with it a little bit. I didn't get into tagging until very recently, and I actually did a video on it. We can put that in the show notes that goes into a little more depth on how I do tagging and things like that. But basically what I do is each category of thing that I work on, so video projects, podcasts, graphic design, development, they all have a tag. Anytime I'm working on something or if I need quick access to something, I tag that file with it. And then on the left-hand side of the Files app, you can just quickly tap on whatever tag you want. So say it's video stuff, I tap on video and it'll bring all my video projects up. It'll bring assets and projects and files and notes and anything like that. It'll bring those up, which is pretty handy to have. And I like that a lot. That being said, I really do think tags, in order to be more useful, they need to be integrated deeper into iOS. Right now, like I said, it only works with stuff that's being saved to iCloud. So I can't tag a bare note as something that's you know, a video project related and be able to bring that up in files. You can do tags in Bear, but that's only in Bear and you can't search for them using Spotlight. So that's kind of a frustrating wall to run up against. It's really something that's really handy if you deal with a large amount of files and you want to break things up per project or per type of file or photo or whatever you kind of want to do. It's just an easy way to break things up, especially if you're not somebody that wants to build a really, really detailed folder structure into figuring out where it is. The nice thing about tags, and I've kind of had it be kind of work to break this habit, is I just have I just create a folder for that project and I dump everything in there and then I tag it properly and then it's really easy for me to find from there.
Okay, so it's kind of a secondary way of organization for you because you still use folders and stuff like that as well.
Yeah, it's I just don't use as detailed folders. I don't create a half a dozen subfolders for things now. I just tag things. So it makes it a little easy. It's kind of a nice way to do search when search isn't exactly at its best on iOS.
I think that kind of goes into depending on like, you know, where you store things and stuff like that, because search isn't necessarily broken, but there's just a lot of things that iOS tries to search within, and you could change those within the settings, but even then it still can be kind of cumbersome to try and find something that you're looking for and things like that. So I can see the benefits of tagging. It's just not something I've never used, and you know, if I do make the switch over to iCloud or try and put more things into iCloud, I think I might actually look into it more and try and do things like that. Because the way that I'm kind of thinking about this as we're talking about it is that, like, I'll have a tag for in-progress writings and stuff like that, things I'm working on currently, whether it's a blog post or something longer that I'm working on or something that I want to continually update and look into that I'm working on, and then also have all of my stuff saved into an archive folder that's been posted or dropped projects. You know, those could have their own tags as well. That's kind of the idea in which that I have that tags can be. And they can be across different folders and stuff like that. So if I have a blog post for Tablet Habit that's dead or something that I've finished, I can tag it accordingly. And if I have some other things that I'm working on that aren't necessarily regards to Tablet Habit, I could tag it with that. Now, my other question is, can you tag it with multiple things or is it like one tag per item?
No, you can tag it with multiple tags. I don't like doing that because then you start to see things show up in wrong places. So if I have a graphics project that's also tied to some video, I will just tag it to the video project because, yeah, it's a graphics thing that I was doing, but really it belongs to a video project. So I like to only just use one tag. I know people that like to use multiple tags, and that's fine. If that's how your brain works, you do it that way. My way isn't the end all be all. It's just what works for me.
Yeah. And that's something that I think that everyone should kind of figure out. You know, especially like, I don't know about you, Chris, but I've played with a ton of different task managers that offer tagging support. And one problem that I always find myself having is that I give it every kind of tag under the sun, whether it's a specific kind of hat that I wear, whether it's for Tablet Habit or a podcast that I'm doing. And then I also give it a tag for whatever specific project was within that. And then I also give it other, like, I tag things way too much. I've noticed that about myself. And so I think maybe if you are trying to do tagging and stuff like that, I should probably kind of be more specific on it, more intentional. Because I find myself that I can get into a deep, deep rabbit hole with my tags and effectively making them useless.
Yeah, I would recommend making your tags very generic, especially at the start. So for you, I would say make a tag for writing, make a tag for podcast, for each of your podcasts, make a tag for personal stuff, make a tag for your day job, and then leave it at that. Don't make it so that you have a tag for writing and then a tag for, you know, a specific writing job or something like that. Just make it very generic at first. I use Todoist for my task manager, and I do tags and I do use projects, but if something's in a project, I won't tag it because I like to keep the projects a little separate, but then I'll use tags for just to kind of be able to sort through things really quick, especially if I have a really busy day.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I think that less is more when it comes to those kind of things for sure.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think that's pretty much it, Chris. I think we've kind of covered all of our bases in regards to cloud storage that I wanted to kind of cover, where we save our stuff, what kind of storage we use, whether it's local or iCloud, and for what reasons, and the services that we use, and everything in between. So I think that's everything that we need to cover with cloud storage. If you have any questions or want to get a hold of us, you can find links in the show notes to do so. I also kind of wanted to talk about something completely off base, Chris, and that would be the new slick wrap or the new decal or sticker. I'm not sure what you want to call it, but I got something that basically goes around my Apple Pencil that adds. Yeah, it's kind of neat. I'm actually going to send you a couple of photos of it right now, and we'll have links to it. We'll have it in the show notes, obviously, but I want to show you what it looks like because I'm actually really proud of it because I created because one thing that Slick Wraps does is that you can actually upload your own design and things like that. And it took me a while to do some trial and error as to like the size in which the file should be and stuff like that. I made all of this in Photoshop on my Mac just because it was easier for me to make it there. And then through a bunch of trial and error, I finally got a template that I like. And I actually might upload the PSD and the PNG file and have anybody that wants to get access to it to download it. I think it would help a lot of people that they want to kind of make their own. So I'm going to go ahead and do that. You should get the photos now. I just sent them.
Okay, yep, I just got it right now. Let's take a look. Oh, that's pretty cool. It has your logo on it. I like that. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I'm actually looking at Slick Wrap's webpage right now, and they have one that caught my eye immediately. It's basically a white pencil with kind of some gray stripes down at the base where you would hold it, but it has the 6-color Apple logo. And
oh, yeah,
if anybody knows me, it's that retro Apple logo is totally me. And in fact, I'm adding it to my cart right now and I'm probably going to order it. So why don't you tell me how you like it and how does it work for you? Does it feel like it gives you any extra grip to the pencil? Because to me, and maybe this is just me, but it feels like the pencil is extra slippery to me.
Yeah, the glossy finish on the Apple Pencil is kind of slippery. I found that, I mean, this is a glossy finish. You can get a matte finish as well. There's two options you can get for pretty much any kind of slick wrap that you get. I prefer the glossy. I think that's just more my style. If you like matte, you can get that as an option as well. For even if you upload your own, they'll print it on a matte finished sticker as opposed to a glossy one. But I always get the glossy ones whenever I get stickers like this and stuff because that's just how I feel. But yeah, there's definitely some added grip to it. There's definitely some extra grippiness to it, I find. It's not as slippery as the glossy finish on the Apple Pencil that's naked, I guess you could say. So it is extra grippy. I like the feel of it. I like the look of it. I'm very happy with how my logo ended up being on this. I mean, I had a high-res logo on it. The image I used was high-res with 300 DPI. So I wasn't expecting it to be super grainy or super noisy when it comes to those kind of things. Because, you know, sometimes you print stickers or you print stuff and when you look at it on your computer screen, it looks great. But then when you print it on like a piece of paper or a sticker, it kind of looks like it's low resolution kind of thing. So, and that's what DPI is. That's, you know, dots per inch or you know, the amount of pixels you have in the file, essentially. Mm-hmm. So when you have a higher DPI, it's a higher resolution file and it's a lot nicer look. And, you know, even if you get really up close to the logo, there's no real noise or anything like that with it. So I'm happy with that look. The one thing that I'm not a huge fan of is the application process. It can be kind of difficult to do. I mean, I'm happy with how I managed to get mine, but it took me a little while to get it right. There's a video on Slick Wrap's website that makes it look way easier than it actually is, which is kind of usually how it goes with installation products and stuff like installation videos on products like this. But, you know, through some trial and error, I managed to get it right. And, you know, even when I put it on and removed the sticker a couple of times, the adhesiveness never really wore out. So the quality of it's really nice. I'm really happy with how it looked. There's one thing, and one of the photos I sent you, Chris, kind of shows this, is that towards the tip, or the nib, if you're a big fountain pen user, they have a separate wrap. So there's four wraps that you get with it. Yeah, you're looking at it now. I know exactly what you're going to say.
Yep, I see it.
So there's four wraps you get. They get the body, the tip, and then you get then there's two stickers for the cap, one for the outer sides of the cap, and then they have a little black dot that goes on top of the cap. I've noticed that because the top of the cap isn't flat, the sticker doesn't really lay correctly. So the top of the cap sticker never goes on for me. It's always a nice white top, but the sticker that goes around it is totally fine. The body sticker is totally fine. But when you get to the little nib or the tip of the pencil, you get this, it's a conical kind of thing, and they have a really nice cut for it, but it just doesn't lay completely flat. And maybe that's my application process on this, but this is the second sticker I've gotten from Slick Wraps. And it always has this issue where it will lay on there fine. There's one ripple or two that you'll get with it, and it's kind of to be expected when it comes to a conical shape. But that's not even the biggest problem for me. The biggest problem for me is that the end overlaps itself. And that to me just doesn't look great. I'm not a huge fan of it, but you know, it is what it is. I don't see that side of things because when I write, I always like to have the logo towards me. I never really see it. And you know, it's kind of to be expected when it comes to putting the sticker on a cylindrical shape. So it's not a deal breaker for me. It might be for other people. I personally love the look of this. I love having an Apple Pencil with my logo on it. It's a very unique looking style pencil because I am the only one that has this because I created the logo on it. I personally love how it looks. I love how it looks in my 12 South pencil snap case. Like the logo just lays flushly outside of it so I see it every time I look at it. I'm very cool. It's very cool to see my own logo on something as nice as an Apple Pencil. So all in all, I'm really happy with how it is, the quality of it, things like that. There are some things that I'm not a huge fan of it, but if you're going to put a sticker on anything, especially as something as oddly shaped as a pencil, you're going to have to kind of give and take a little bit. And so I like it a lot. I'm curious to see if and when you do get yours, Chris, how the application process.
I just ordered one.
You just ordered one? Okay, so I'm interested to sort of see how the application process is for you.
Yeah, I just ordered. So if you go to Slick Wraps website, they have ones called the Creative Series. And there is a white one with the gray stripes that I talked about with that Retro Apple logo. That's the one I just ordered. I did the standard shipping, so I have no idea when it'll be here. But I'm actually really excited. I'm looking at this one. I definitely see what you're talking about as far as the application process and putting the thing on. I'm a little nervous about that because I'm not the best when it comes to putting on stickers and wraps and things like that. So I have shaky hands when it comes to that. So we'll see what that looks like. Yeah, I'm really excited. If you're not somebody that's super creative, looking at Slick Wraps website, they have a ton of options.
And they're not a sponsor, by the way. I'm just super happy about the quality and stuff like that. So this isn't a sponsored content or anything like that. I'm just a huge fan of the stuff. So yeah, I mean, they've got a ton of options, a ton of really nice things. They have one that literally just looks like a regular pencil, which I think is really cool. I don't know if Mike Hurley got his through Slick Wraps or someone else, but he has his own custom pencil wrap that he has on his as well, and it looks really nice and really cool. So I mean, he's one of the reasons that made me think about doing this as well. So I'm happy with it. There is another downside though when it comes to adding a sticker to your Apple Pencil, especially if you use something like the 12 South pencil snap, which is essentially just a little sleeve that you put your pencil in. It's a lot tighter, especially when you're getting certain things when that you slide the pencil in. It won't necessarily it might not fit as cleanly as it did before. Like, it's definitely more snug. The one thing I've noticed about the 12 South is that it's all leather, so it has some give and it will fit. And I think over time the leather will stretch out just enough for the pencil to fit in there perfectly. I have found that I have to kind of wiggle it a little bit more to get it out and things like that, but all in all, it still works and still is fine for me. And I'm just going to give it a few weeks and see how it is from there. But I haven't had any real big issues with it, but it can kind of be annoying when you're trying to get your pencil out and then it's just a pain to get out. But, you know, as I'm fiddling around with it while I talk to you about this, I've actually managed to train it to be a little bit easier on the leather to get it out and stuff like that. So it's, you know, there are some kind of things that you have to get used to and kind of a couple of quirks you have to get used to when putting stickers on things, but that's to be expected. So I think we'll have to talk about your Apple Pencil wrap in some follow-up in future episodes once you finally get it in.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm kind of curious to see how this turns out. I've just recently got into stickers on devices and stuff like that. I used to be one of those Apple purists that didn't like putting anything on his device. But I ended up getting my own sticker with my own logo, and I kind of went a little overboard. So we'll see. We'll have to talk about that one time.
Yeah, that'd be another fun after show kind of topic or something like that. So you know, Chris, I think that's it for this episode. I don't know if you have any other side topics that you want to talk about now, or if you want to wrap the show up or what.
I'm good. If you guys have any questions, feel free to ask us on Twitter. I'm at Chris_Lawley. That's LAWLEY. Jeff, where can they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at I am Jeff Perry, or over at tablethabit.com. and you can read some posts and stuff that I have on there. And that's kind of my home on the internet, you know, to say.
Yeah, and I have a YouTube channel based all around iOS and iPad productivity. You can find all that stuff at theuntitledsite.com. We also set up a hashtag, so if you guys want to ask us any questions, you can use the hashtag aslabofglass if you want to ask us any questions. This is our third episode that we kind of pre-recorded. After this, we're going to kind of go to a fortnightly schedule, so every 2 weeks. So we'll start answering questions then. Anything else you want to add, Jeff?
I mean, this is sort of the last episode that we're coming out with launch and stuff like that. So if you're listening to this, thank you for being the first kind of listeners when it comes to a slab of glass and being a part of the show. And do get a hold of us and reach out to us, because we're really curious to see what you guys think of the show. And we definitely want to cater to people that are very iPad users and things like that. So if you have any questions or topic ideas, definitely use that hashtag and get a hold of us. And we'll be happy to respond. I mean, I'm active on Twitter almost every hour, and anytime I get something new come in, I always respond. And I don't know if you're the same way, Chris, but engagement's always a ton of fun. And Twitter's definitely my favorite place to go when it comes to that kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I try and get back to people as quickly as possible. We both do have day jobs, so if we don't get back to you right away, it's probably because we're working. So forgive us, but we will get back to you as soon as possible. I promise.
Yeah. So until then, though, have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you guys in 2 weeks.
See ya.